Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
Before I offer my talk, I'd like to say a few words about something that Jeff said in the very beginning, wherein he asked us all to hold the eyes of compassion for the people in Nepal. So what does that mean, really? I think normally when we think of Nepal, that thought creates a country that's far away, an ocean away. It's over by India somewhere. So that thought creates a distance, creates a separation. And that separation, that thought that creates that separation, has consequences. And I think it creates a space, a distance that we feel from the people in Nepal. So when Jeff says, hold the eyes of compassion for the people in Nepal, I think that's a call for us to allow the mind to still, the mind that produces these thoughts that create separation. And when we do that, we have an experience. And that experience is that we realize that we are connected to the people of Nepal. We are the people of Nepal. And those people in Nepal are our brothers and our sisters. They are our family. And when we realize that, that they're our brothers and our sisters and our family, we naturally have compassion. So that's how I understand what Jeff was saying. That's what we mean about holding the eyes of compassion, about allowing the separation, allowing the thought that creates that distance to drop away and realize the fundamental connection that we have. Now, most of you know that holding our hands like this, the name for that is gassho. And each time we place our palms together in gassho, if we do it without analysis or expectation, a burden is lifted from our spirit and we feel joyful. Just simply putting our palms together. Too often, students of Zen live and practice with a Zen face on. This is the face that shows the world how serious and deep practice is. And when Maizumi Roshi, by the way, is the teacher who came from Japan here and started the lineage that we're part of. And when Maizumi Roshi told his students that practice was, quote, a matter of life and death, do you think that this is what he meant? This Zen face, we should keep a Zen face on. We should be serious and deep. Our practice should be serious and deep. Was he encouraging students to take themselves very seriously because our practice is a matter of life and death? Was he saying that there is no time for joy or delight? The clock is ticking. Or was this his way of saying, wake up, life may be short, so don't miss one moment. Wake up and experience the joy of being alive this moment. Listen to this haiku by Basho. Skylark on the moor, sweet song of non-attachment. When I read this haiku, I imagined that the skylark is not full of seriousness and self-importance. I imagined that it is just singing. And this just singing is a living example of non-attachment. Singing just to sing. If we listen to this sweet song with a still mind, we are likely to experience feelings of delight. Another haiku reads, the temple bell stops, but the sound keeps coming out of the flowers. if you really let yourself hear and feel the sound of the bell, you may discover it's a delicious taste of the present moment, which may be accompanied by feelings of joy and delight. In his book, Sweeping Changes, Gary Thorpe reminds us that our life and all that is in it are simply on loan to us. So from this perspective, he encourages the reader to use certain chores, such as doing the dishes, sweeping the walk, mending clothes, mowing the lawn, brushing our teeth, as occasions to appreciate life. He also points out that there is a sense of connection buried in everyday acts, which we can become aware of if we pay attention. So when we pay attention to even the ordinary, as he suggests, life comes alive, and when it does, changes from being a pain in the ass to a source of joy and delight. How many people consider having a dinner party, walking into the kitchen and see a pile of dishes on the sink as an opportunity to experience joy and delight? Usually I think we think of it as a pain in the ass. That's a thought. And if we allow the mind to be still of those kind of thoughts, then the dishes become an opportunity for joy and for delight. There's another haiku which reads, "While I mow the lawn, butterflies flit in a yard of sunlight. While I mow the lawn, butterflies flit in a yard of sunlight." When we are aware while mowing the lawn, it becomes a beautiful activity. If we are not full of self-importance and become intimate with this very moment, we will find joy in even the simplest of activities. This is the experience of non-separation. This is the moment when we experience that, quote, "every object, every being is a jar full of delight, a jar full of delight to which we are deeply connected." In honor of my head monk, Jeff, I'm going to read a Mary Oliver poem. It's called Mindful. "Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclimation. I am not talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentation. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers that are made out of grass." When we learn to surrender to the moment, we are unburdened of self-centeredness and of self-importance. And this frees us to experience the lightness of body and spirit. Our practice becomes open-hearted, selfless, and joyful. Thank you.